This is Jason Q. Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the Jason Q. Citizen and Friends program. We're coming live from Australia. It's Friday evening over here, where it is over wherever you are in the world. It's probably Friday somewhere. And as we approach the weekend, it's a time to take stock and work out where we're going next week as we see competing ideas fighting, as we all do, to make sure that we have our lives in order for the next onslaught that seems to be coming until the people that control the planet and insist that they know everything and we know nothing work out that they're plain wrong. In tonight's show, I'm going to be introducing you again to Merrill Dorey, who is the founder of the Australian Vaccine Network. And we're going to be able to discuss in some detail about what's happening in the update in the court hearings that have now gone to a full bench of the federal court as of next Friday. It's a big, big deal because they were arguing and fighting for standing to get out there and they were rejected in their first attempt. The legal team over there have worked day and night, and we're going to get a full update of what's going on in this very, very important case. But before we do, let's just have a look at some of the information that's coming out in the world today. In Australia, the next big election coming up will be the Victorian state election in November of this year. And Dan Andrews, who in the freedom community would be considered enemy number one for the way that he treated Victorians over the last 2 years, is now suffering a leak of his talent in his team, where now four key ministers have pulled the pin in a massive blow. And they're calling it the abandonship. 12 already have left his team, and one wonders if this will be enough for Victorians to say, you know what, we've had enough of this bloke, dump him. Unfortunately, down in Victoria, the opposition is almost non-existent. We don't know who they are or what they've got to say, and they tend to follow the same thing. So that tends to mean that Andrews is headed to be re-elected. But I tell you what, if there was ever one bloke that his own team is telling him that he should leave, it's the Victorian Labor Party. Now, Alex Antic, Senator for South Australia, Federal Senator, has written an article on his social media today when he asked a question a few weeks ago to the Chief Health Operator, Brendan Murphy, the definition of a woman. And our Senator Alex Antic said the 78 words of drivel, another one of our taxpayer-funded departments, has shown how deeply it has become infected with the corrosive principles of radical gender theory. So when Murphy was asked, how do you define a woman, he had to go away and take leave before he could come up with an answer. And the answer that came back was this. The frameworks adopted to define a person's gender include chromosomal makeup, the gender assigned at birth, and the gender with which a person identifies. The Department of Health does not adopt a single definition. Health policies and access to health programs are based on clinical evidence and clinical need for all Australians, regardless of gender identity, biological characteristics, or genetic variations. Our programs are designed to be inclusive and to provide a better health and well-being for all Australians. That's how Brendan Murphy defines a woman. Now, Sky News has come out with a warning from Chief Medical Officer Paul Kelly on Friday, warned that COVID reinfection rates were expected to increase because it's winter. Funny how in Nigeria, they can't seem to catch COVID, but here in Australia, 30,000 cases a day is the norm. So, health experts are warning Australians to brace for a new wave of COVID-19 reinfections as Omicron subvariants rise. A rise in these subvariant cases and waning vaccine immunity has prompted fresh concerns over a new wave of COVID-19 infections, warns Mr. Kelly. And he says that these subvariants of BA4 and BA5 gain traction on Australia's east coast. Wonder why these infections don't happen in Nigeria. We are seeing reinfections. We know that Omicron, having had a previous dose of one of the other variants of COVID-19, did escape that immune protection from a previous dose and from only two doses of vaccine, he told Sky News Australia's Peter Stefanovic. Sub variants of Omicron BA4 and BA5, that's now become the dominant strain in the UK, for example, another heavily vaccinated country, and it is growing particularly on the east coast of Australia, another heavily vaccinated region. We know that this is more transmissible and it does have a tendency to escape the immune system. Escape the immune system. I think he means escape the vaccine immunity that doesn't work. So we will see reinfections over the coming weeks and months, unfortunately. Prof. Kelly said that while the subvariants were more transmissible, there was not an increase in the severity of COVID-19 infections. What we're not seeing is a large increase in severe disease that's really due to vaccine protection, which can be boosted with a third and fourth dose, he said. Wonder what happens with those that have had no doses. He added COVID-19 treatments and the availability of antivirals also aided in reducing the number of serious cases. Chair of Epidemiology at Deakin University, Professor Catherine Bennett, said cases were likely to surge as vaccine immunity wanes and urged the importance of booster shots. So if you're not at the start of winter, if you're now at the start of winter as we are here in Australia and you haven't had a booster, but you've had it now, you halve your risk of having an infection over the next while, she told Sky News. I don't know how they work that out, how they get these numbers exact. So anyway, that takes care of what Sky News is talking about, warnings, warnings, warnings. Meanwhile, an article has come out from Will Jones, and it refers to a new paper by BMJ editor Dr. Peter Doshi and colleagues has analysed data from the Pfizer and Moderna COVID vaccine trials and found that the vaccines are more likely to put you in hospital with a serious adverse event than keep you out by protecting you from COVID. The preprint, which means not yet peer-reviewed, focuses on serious adverse events highlighted in a WHO-endorsed priority list of potential adverse events relevant to COVID-19 vaccines. The authors evaluated the serious adverse events of special interest as observed in phase 3 randomized trial of mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. A serious adverse event was defined as per the trial protocols as an adverse event that results in any of the following conditions: death, life-threatening at the time of the event, inpatient hospitalization or prolongation of existing hospitalization, persistent or significant disability incapacity, a congenital anomaly or birth defect, and a medically important event based on medical judgment. Dr. Doshi and colleagues found that the Pfizer and Moderna mRNA COVID-19 vaccines were associated with an increased risk of serious adverse events of special interest of 10.1 events per 10,000 vaccinated for Pfizer and 15.1 events per 10,000 for Moderna. When combined, the mRNA vaccines were associated with a risk increase of serious adverse events of special interest of 12.5 per 10,000. The authors note that this level of increased risk post-vaccine is greater than the risk reduction for COVID-19 hospitalization in both Pfizer and Moderna trials, which was 2.3 per 10,000 for Pfizer and 6.4 for Moderna. This means that on measure, the Pfizer vaccine results in a net increase in serious adverse events of 7.8 per 10,000 and Moderna of 8.7. They conclude that there is a need for formal harm-benefit analyses for COVID vaccines, taking into account that the different levels of risk of serious COVID and adverse events that exist between demographic groups. Ideally, this would be based on individual participant data, they say, though such data remain frustratingly unavailable. So there you have it, competing ideas. The government of the day is telling you keep taking the vaccines. The studies are coming out saying that you're actually better off not even taking them when you've got situations here where they refer to pulmonary embolism, acute myocardial infarction, immune thrombocytopenia and disseminated intravascular coagulation. And it stated that it would be further investigate the findings, but yet no updates as yet. So what a time to have Meryl Dorey with us. Don't go anywhere. We're going to have her on the show in just a moment. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Digging deeper on the facts.
It's a source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to the program. This is Jason Q, Citizen and Friends, and one of our friends is with us today, Australian Vaccine Network founder Meryl Dorey. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jason. It's wonderful to be here again.
Yeah, thank you, Meryl. And your work that you're doing and your organization is leading the path here in Australia and hopefully the rest of the world. Some big, big news you've got, because this work that you've been doing has culminated. We thought we'd be a bit further along, but you got a setback, but that hasn't stopped you, has it? You've got something big coming up next Friday.
Well, we do have something big. I'm not sure of the date of Friday, but we have just filed our appeal this week to the full bench of the federal court. And the appeal is asking for the three top judges in Australia to adjudicate on whether the AVN, the organization, the Australian Vaccination Risks Network, and our co-applicant, Mark Neugebauer, who has lost his job because he refuses to take the jab and is the foster parent of a child who is right now being threatened with being forced to take the jab, whether or not we have standing. And standing basically means a close enough relationship to the issue to be allowed to go to court and discuss it there. The first judge that we actually were before said that neither one of us had standing. Our legal team, including our very senior counsel, Mark Robinson, believes otherwise, believes that there were some serious errors in law made in that decision, and therefore we are appealing. We don't have a date yet, but we've asked for an urgent appeal, and we expect to be in the court very soon, perhaps as soon as next week.
Oh, good. Well, that's good news. So this is moving along. And I don't know if you're able to talk in more detail about these errors in law, but it just seems entirely inappropriate that a foster parent who doesn't want to take the jab doesn't have standing to challenge this in a court of law. It just defies all logic.
Well, that was our feeling too. And Mark Robinson, the senior counsel, cited many, many precedents that go back over 100 years in Australia that would actually show that we do have standing in his opinion. And we believe that when we go before the full bench of the federal court, that they will agree with us. And if I can just very briefly talk about what this case is about, because we were never, because there was an issue made of standing, which we thought was a bit on the odd side. But because there was an issue made about standing, we never actually got to present our incredible information to the court. We have information from some of the most esteemed experts around the world about the lack of safety, lack of effectiveness, and the harm that's being caused by these COVID jabs. And now is the time where we have to do this, because the Australian government has already made noises that they're going to be bringing the jab in for 6-month-olds and up. And that is obscene. It's criminal. These are people who have no risk from COVID, and yet they are at great risk from the jab. So our case is basically two parts. One is to cancel or suspend the provisional approvals of all currently licensed, or none of them are licensed, my apologies, all currently provisionally approved COVID jabs. And the other part is to stop the jabbing of children who are aged between 5 and 11. And we hope to do this before even 1 6-month-old child has to take this jab. We've already had 5 deaths reported in the 5 to 11-year-old age group. And we've had many, many reactions reported. And again, this is an age group that never saw a death from COVID, and really and truly, as far as I know, never saw a hospitalization either. So these kids are being injured in large numbers. We've had 1,500 adverse effects reported in the 5 to 11-year age group. And that's about 20 a week in Australia. And each one of these is a total waste. And many of these children may never recover. Many of them have myocarditis and pericarditis and may die, sadly, at a young age due to heart problems. So, you know, this is when you're weighing up benefits versus risks. These jabs have not yet been shown to have any benefits, but they've been proved well and truly to have a great deal of risk, more than any other vaccine ever before. And they also don't provide protection to the person who gets them, and they cannot prevent that person from spreading or transmitting COVID to another party. So there's no protection and only risk.
Yes, exactly right. We've been arguing this for a very, very long time, and it seems to fall on deaf ears. So the work that you're doing is absolutely crucial that we can get it into an official section of the, well, of adjudication of authority and being a court of law to try and get them to make a ruling in the favour to protect these children. Absolutely. How confident are you now that that you're going to, first of all, win the appeal and then go on to win this case?
We're very confident that we're going to win the appeal because, as I said, our senior counsel, and all of this documentation is actually on our website, avn.org.au. If you just click on the judicial review section, you'll see the actual paperwork that was filed in the federal court. There are a list of errors that are put out by Mark Robinson, the senior counsel. And there are many, many errors he believes the judge made in her original decision. It'll be up to the full bench of the court to actually look at that and say, yes, these were errors. But we are very confident and we've gotten an opinion that we have a very good prospect of that going ahead. When it comes to our two cases, we also believe that major errors were made in approving the 5 to 11 year old vaccination. So we feel very confident that that's going to also be won and will stop the vaccination, or I hate to call it a vaccination because it's not, the jabbing of children between the ages of 5 and 11, and will nip in the bud any attempt by the government to actually administer this bioweapon to children from 6 months of age and up. And keep in mind that Moderna has now said that they're going to start studying this in 3-month-old children who don't even have any issue with COVID if they even catch it. So, you know, unless we stop it here, the future is not looking very bright for our children. We are seeing overseas terrible, terrible reactions in the United States, which has approved this. And today was the first day that they started in the United States with the 6-month-olds. And as you said in your introduction, there was a very evil and financially profitable reason for the drug companies to really want to give the vaccine in this age group. And it's because in the United States, at least, if they can get this added onto the infant schedule, then they will be able to maintain the indemnity from prosecution and financial penalties that they already enjoy for the emergency use authorized products. That way they can license the products, because none of these are licensed anywhere in the world. They're all experimental, and everyone who takes a COVID jab is a guinea pig, but they can license it and get protection across the board forever, basically, as long as the country will allow it, and as long as the population will allow it. And hopefully this will stop. When we have our case in court and when we win our case in court, it will not just be a victory for Australians. It'll be a victory around the world. And I think that our victory will actually set a precedent that will be used, especially in the UK and New Zealand, where we use similar legal systems. In the United States, it might not be quite so easy, but the government is desperate to keep us out of court because they know that we have all of the evidence that will show that they have absolutely done the wrong thing. They have ignored all safety signals and they have allowed innocent Australian adults and children to be killed and permanently injured by a jab that never should have been approved in the first place. It was never studied or tested.
One listens to these stories and it's mind-boggling. It's heartbreaking. It's so bad. And Meryl, we've talked about this before previously. We set up, my wife and I, a group called A Million Mums for Informed Consent because we assumed that no one gets between a lioness and her cubs. And when they came for the children, the parents would see the statistics that were already glaringly in your face, and they would say no. But the power of persuasion of authority is something to behold. And I've just looked up as you were speaking there the official statistics from health.gov.au, and there have been 417,000 cases of COVID reported in the age group of 0 to 9, with an official reading of 9 deaths. But we do know, and we've actually seen just this week, there was a family from South Australia whose child had passed away and was considered a COVID death, and the parents got onto social media and said, how dare you say it was a COVID death, a respiratory death? The child didn't even have COVID, and you've recorded it as a COVID death. So based on official numbers, and we know that they're actually incorrect, the risk to a child today is 1 in 46,333 who get COVID will die from it. So you're talking 99.9998% survival rate in 0 to 9s, and in 10 to 19 of 548,000 cases, the official official fatality rate is 1 in 78,286. And I've reported on this in the past and kept data on it, that 6 of those 7 deaths did not die from COVID. So your official number is 1 in 548,000 cases will die from COVID. I mean, it's basically non-existent. And that takes into account people of all health status, of all comorbidities, regardless. It's absolutely disgraceful that this thing can get away. They can get away with it and not be challenged on it. And there is no one, it seems, in authority that dares speak out about it. And so you can only think that they're either all in on it or they're all completely stupid and are just playing along because their jobs depend on it. I can't believe, Merrill, that when we've lived through the Holocaust of World War II, and we heard the excuse of it was just a job, and that, and we were told and reminded every day, every year, that this will never happen again. And here we are, literally in a medical Holocaust, and no one can dare speak out about it. The medical profession, I don't understand where they're coming from. It makes no sense to me. It's absolutely frustrating. I want to talk more. We need to go to a break, but I want to talk more about the background of what you're doing in the AVN, more about this case after the break. There is so much for our listeners to be able to hear and to know that there is someone in their corner batting for them and their children as we fight to get out of this peril that these governments are insistent upon and clearly look to be answering to higher-ups from a global regime, and none of it looks good. But we still, while there's fight in us, there's hope. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Mike Ryan.
Now, are legal avenues and effective means of pursuing government overreach during a pandemic, or probably, maybe it's a bit early to say. Well, one guy who knows all about this is Tony Nicolick. He's a freedom fighter of great strength and character. He's also a highly accomplished lawyer and criminologist committed to social justice. Has there been any court wins in relation to COVID-19 vaccine mandates in Australia?
At the present moment, there hasn't. There have been small inroads. So we've had a merits review that has been granted. Obviously, we've had small inroads in respect of how the courts may perceive these mandates with respect to the principle of legality. Okay, that's all about rights and whether someone can exercise their right to say no to something. At the media, now the media has termed anyone that exercises a free will to be an anti-vaxxer.
Mike Ryan on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I think people should come to Freedom Fest for the friendship, getting to know folks, getting to talk with people that have similar views, but also can kind of challenge you a little bit.
One of the best things about Freedom Fest is coming here and learning that you are not alone in your fight for freedom.
There's people from all walks of life, from all across the United States and even the world, come here.
Don't miss Freedom Fest,
the largest liberty event of the year.
July 13th to 16th at the Mirage in Las Vegas. For more information, go to freedomfest.com.
The journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. At Children International, we know that the journey to end poverty for good begins first with a child. It starts with their first checkup, lesson, opportunity, job. That journey takes commitment from people like you and me to end poverty for good. Learn more at children.org.
Bullets are not shot at us from the barrels of guns. Poisons are shot into us from the barrels of syringes. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends, and I have Merrill Dorey on the line with me today from the Australian Vaccine Network, and we're discussing the case that has gone to, well, has just been lodged for appeal before the full bench of the federal court, and we're discussing that this in relation to children who specifically have survival rates of COVID somewhere in the vicinity of 99.9998%. Now, Merrill, when you look at the statistics in the elderly, specifically in the age group of 90 plus, which, goodness me, it's 8 years after life expectancy, there is still a 90.6% survival rate when catching COVID. So how much of an overreaction can this possibly be in relation to anything else you've ever seen?
It's a huge overreaction. And what really concerns me is that, like, for the last 20 years, every single year or every second year, we have had a threat of another illness like this. We've had AH1N1, we've had bird flu, we've had Ebola, all these different diseases that the governments have come out and said going to kill all of us, and they never did. And yet when COVID came out, people were terrified. And I think the media has a real role to play in this, because people were seeing videos of people dropping dead in China on the street, supposedly with COVID. And the whole thing was a great big lie. Have we ever seen anyone keeling over in the street in Australia? No. And I'm so glad that you raised the idea that of the children who have supposedly died from COVID, most of them haven't. Whenever you read a headline and it says died with COVID, you can guarantee that that was just a positive test and it had nothing to do with the reason that person died. They could have died in a car accident. They could have had terminal cancer. But if they test positive, they're going to be put down as a death from COVID. The government and the medical community have consistently overstated the risk of COVID and understated or completely ignored the risk from the vaccine. If you get injured or get sick from COVID, you will get sympathy from everyone you meet. If you are injured or a loved one is killed by the jab, you will be, you know, denigrated, you will be made fun of. People will simply not take you seriously. And this is really, really wrong. These people's stories need to be heard. And their stories are very important. And sadly, there are many more people who've reacted to the jab than there are people who've actually had problems with COVID or died from COVID.
Merrill, why do you think it is that anybody who is skeptical of the vaccine is automatically vilified as somebody in a minority? And yet when, and this is why I brought up the subject of the definition of woman in the opening part of the show, if you're dealing with a community that is considered a minority, the transsexual community, which is less than 0.5% of the population, or much less, and yet if it's totally the opposite, every way we look at it, we have to reaffirm, we have to comply, we have to fit in, we have to make people feel comfortable about things that aren't scientific, but just a way that they feel. But on the other side of it, when we're dealing with a vaccine that's experimental, is it because of the word vaccine, it holds a higher standing in the community, or it's been sold that way, that the propaganda is so much that you are just simply not ever allowed to question regardless? And this has been the line in the sand this time around, that it's still so obvious, but still they won't look. Why is it that one minority, everything goes in one direction, and the other minority completely vilified?
Because there's an agenda here. And I don't want to sound like I'm a conspiracy theorist. I'm not. I'm a conspiracy realist. This is an agenda that's been going on for probably close to 100 years. It's an agenda to destroy the nuclear family, to actually take away our ability to make decisions about the least little thing that we do. I'm not just talking about vaccinations or medical treatments. I'm talking about what foods we eat, what education our children have. Why is it that in the United States, where I think the latest figure I heard was 2% of the population considered themselves to be transsexual, in the under 20 age group, it is close to 30% now who consider themselves to be transsexual. They've been groomed. We are grooming our children by sending them to public school and allowing them to be subjected to this horrible abuse that's going on there. And the vaccination issue is just one part of it. And I believe that people need to wake up. Today on Twitter, I saw a lot of parents talking about they're setting an alarm so they can get their two-year-old or three-year-old to the doctors on time to get the jab. And I'm thinking, have you even done 5 minutes worth of research into this? And if you have, why are you still going ahead with it? People have been brainwashed. I'm just reading a book now called The Psychology of Totalitarianism by a psychologist named Matthias Desmet, who you may have heard of. He's the one who has made famous, he didn't coin it, but made famous the term mass formation psychosis. And yes. Basically, he believes that what we are experiencing now is the majority of the community who are totally brainwashed and incapable of actually seeing the truth, even if it's put right in front of them. And it's an excellent book. It's very hopeful, which I'm really glad about because I think we need a bit of hope. But we are surrounded by people who are no longer able to think for themselves. And it is not anything to do with intelligence. It is to do with how much you have been brainwashed, how much you have been affected by mainstream media or the education system, the university system. You will not get out of university today unless you agree with all of the propaganda that's thrown your way. So what happens is when people see someone who's been injured by a jab or they experience it themselves, that's when they wake up. And we are trying to sort of cut out the middleman and wake them up before they have the problem, before someone dies, before someone is injured. And I don't know if I can talk a little bit about our vaxxed bus because we're about to leave on another tour. If anybody has not already heard about the vaxxed movement, it started in the United States. And if you go to our website and just do a search for the vaxxed movement, you can read about it. It was started by Polly Tommy, who's the mother of an autistic son, and Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who probably a lot of people have heard about, and Del Bigtree from The High Wire. And basically, they said the same thing we've been saying, Jason, that the people who have had injuries are totally silent, are not allowed to speak in society, and they won't because they're afraid they're going to be criticized or ridiculed. So they bought a bus, they went around the country, they made two documentaries, Vaxxed and Vaxxed 2, and they gave thousands and thousands of families a voice. And this was before COVID. Now, we bought a Vaxxed bus, the AVN, and we've done several tours. Unfortunately, our bus was drowned in the floods up in northern New South Wales, but we've got another vaxxed bus and we're going to be going out on the road on July 1st. And we're going to be there for 3 weeks, speaking to people from Mullaney to the Gold Coast and down through New South Wales, Tamworth, Tenorfield, Moree, Dubbo, all of these places. And we are getting people booking in to tell their stories. And people can go to our website, click on the picture of the bus, and make an appointment to come in and either see the bus or tell their story. And I can tell you that the emotion that people share after they've told their story more than anything is both gratitude and relief at finally being heard, finally being believed, and not treated like some second-class citizen just because they did what they were told was the right thing and they or their children suffered as a result of it.
It's such important work, isn't it? And there's a couple of points I want to make there. The idea that you're using the vax, obviously, and Andrew Wakefield, that to me was the great wake-up call for me in terms of vaccines. When I saw that original documentary and saw how each time the CDC and the conversation kept changing the data set so that it was removing the MMR connection, you realised in real time what was going on, and I was left scratching scratching my head thinking, how can these people deny this? And of course that they were. That was the whole point of it. It was the great scam. And poor Andrew Wakefield suffered terribly professionally because of it. And all he was doing was exposing in reality total corruption at that point. And so it was a huge deal. And when you do work these things out for yourself, you can't help but go and want to battle for what we call the lost causes. And I guess that's how these wonderful people who finally have somewhere where they can be heard, and the wonderful people truly are the people of the Australian Vaccine Network who are putting it together, Meryl. You're doing God's own work, and in the face of absolute vilification and the horrible things that people want to say, and yet you provide a voice for all of these people to be heard. And it's absolutely important that the work continues to be done out there, and more people are going to need to be heard in terms of this vaccine injury. I guess the next thing, Meryl, in all of this is trying to get our heads around this new concept, this invented term, even though it's not invented, but the numbers, again, that just don't add up in terms of SADS. What was originally sudden arrhythmic death syndrome has become sudden adult death syndrome, and we're seeing every single day, I'm reporting on my own World Series news page, you know, at least two or three deaths every day of young adults, teenagers, dying from heart-related injury, generally heart attack or something similar, and no one is saying anything. I mean, even yesterday there was an event in the swimming where a swimmer in a particular event just fell to the bottom of the swimming pool. It was only that a coach was paying attention and jumped in and saved to life. These are just extraordinary situations, and still no one is putting together this mass vaccination event and saying maybe we need to have a look.
Well, a lot of people are putting it together, but it, unfortunately, those people are not the ones who have the forums of the media or the government. We have Brendan Murphy, who is the Secretary of the Department of Health, who is saying that he can't see a safety signal. Well, we believe that he's got both hands covering his eyes, and that's the only reason he can't see it, because the safety signal is so loud right now. And I'm glad you brought that up about the woman in the pool. I saw that. It looked terrifying. There was a study that just came out that said in the last 100 years, there's been an average of 29 players, athletes, who have collapsed on the field. So 29 every year who collapse on the field. And in the last year, it's something just under 1,200. So if that's not a safety signal, I don't know what is. We have, I think it's over 800 in the last year who have died. These are the fittest and most athletic people in the world, and they are dropping dead on the field or in their sleep. I've got to tell you, young people who are healthy do not die in their sleep. It just doesn't happen. And yet it is happening all the time now. And people are just trying to excuse it. When I say people, I mean the government and the media. They're trying to say that it's SADS. SADS is nothing more than an excuse to take any attention away from the jab, just like SIDS in infants is, just like Munchausen syndrome by proxy is, just like shaken baby syndrome is. None of these are real conditions that people suffered before vaccine schedules and mass vaccination policies came in. When a child dies after a vaccination and there is no other cause, they will be called a death from SIDS or a death from shaken baby, depending on their age, or a death from SUDS. That was the other abbreviation, sudden unexplained death syndrome. That's a child over the age of one who dies unexpectedly. But these are not unexpected deaths. These are deaths that can be traced back to the jabs or to other medical treatments that have been given. Vaccines are not the only reason these children are dying, but it is one of the major reasons. And as long as we allow the government and the medical community to get away with lying about this, we will continue to see these deaths occur. We need to stop it.
We absolutely need to stop it. And we need to be able to get the information out in what I always thought it was about, the bite-sized chunks, to make it make sense. And now, again, in the time that you're answering the question, of course, I can't help myself with my statistics, but I've just gone through and completed that data. And I just want to Just throw this out there, of course, just for those people that may or may not ever hear this this conversation. But if you're 90 plus, you have a 1 in 11 chance of dying if you get COVID. 1 in 11, so 10 out of 11 survive. If you're 80 to 89, you're 1 in 23 if you get COVID to pass away. Now, these are people who have already reached life expectancy. So it's expected that most of these people, one way or another, are going to have some form of medication, comorbidity, something like that. And yet 22 out of 23 people who get COVID, vaccinated or not, survive. You get into the 70s, 70 to 79, and we have to consider this age group to be elderly, certainly retirement age, and it bumps up to 1 in 87 people who get COVID die. 86 out of 87 79-year-olds survive COVID. It's not looking dangerous at all. Then you go into the 60 to 69, so still generally working age, but nearing retirement or retired. 1 in 357, Merrill. 1 in 357, 60 to 69s. 50 to 59, my age bracket. 1 in 1,274 people. And I can tell you what, there's plenty of unwell people in the 50 to 59 bracket in this country, whether it be diabetes or obesity or cancer or heart disease, all these things that they send you, bowel cancer, they send you everything in the mail these days, go get tested for this, that, and the other, and 1,273 out of 1,274 survive. In the 40 to 49 age group, 1 in 4,085. And in the 30 to 39 bracket, 1 in 9,431 people will die from COVID who gets it, 1 in 9,431. And in the 20 to 29 bracket, and all these people had to go get vaccinated to keep their jobs, they told us, 1 in 31,600. It's embarrassing that this could be the case and that they can tell us that it is a one-size-fits-all solution. Children, 1 in 500,000 are at risk. 1 in 500,000, and the elderly 90 plus, 1 in 11. It's just an absolute astonishing anomaly of intelligence of anything that goes on. I know this, going through this now for 2 years. In my family, we've had a COVID isolation suicide of an elderly person in my immediate family. And I recently lost my uncle at 83, who'd been double jabbed and had cancer that came back and ripped him apart in no time at all. And he lost hope and gave up. It's just horrible. And so we're seeing the other side of the coin now, and it's absolutely important that people know that they're not alone when they're seeing these anomalies and have somewhere where they can at least go and talk and let it out and start asking questions. And I keep saying it, Merrill, you are doing God's work. We've got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the positive sign and what we can expect if the AVN do get up in this challenge and where we go next, because we are fighting for everyone's survival here. Don't stop. You're listening to TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The upcoming Republican primary for Colorado's 3rd Congressional District will be held on the 28th of June. Incumbent Representative Lauren Boebert faces GOP challenger Don Corum, a current Colorado senator who has made it his mission to unseat Boebert. Legacy establishment media have been very critical of Boebert. She has been described, among other things, as a far-right controversialist and conspiracy theorist. Boebert has certainly made some controversial statements, but she has a record of passionate freedom fighting in many areas, including her opposition to extreme government COVID mandates. She was one of the few Republican members of Congress to oppose the $40 billion package to assist Ukraine. And unlike her opponent Corum, she disputes the result of the 2020 presidential election. The primary election result on Tuesday will be interesting. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
A man's home is his castle, but his men's shed, that's his kingdom. There are now more than 1,000 men's sheds across Australia. And they're more than just a shed. You can make things, grow things, find a mate, be a mate, shoulder to shoulder. The Australian Men's Shed Association can help to find a shed near you. Yeah, there's something for you at
the Men's Shed. The PCR test for monkeypox. Another crap PCR test for another crap virus. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. We're talking all things COVID and COVID vaccine in this show with Meryl Dorey from the Australian Vaccine Network. In Australia today, there have been so far 7.9 million cases of COVID recorded in this country. If you rewind the clock to December of last year, just 7 months ago, we were sitting around about 250,000 cases. So what's happened in the last 7 months is that Omicron escaped South Africa and arrived in Australia via aeroplane. That was documented. And Australia reached its 95% double jabbed vaccine status. Now, my favourite subject in all of this is always Nigeria. They had at the same time, around the same, 250,000 COVID cases at Christmas. Well, today they are sitting on 256,711 cases of COVID. They've had 6,000 cases of COVID since Christmas, and Australia has had 7.7 million cases of COVID. We had around about 2,500 deaths. We're now sitting at just under 8,000 deaths in this country. And here's the point I wanted to bring up, Meryl. If you lived in Nigeria today, you have a 1 in 82 chance of dying if you get COVID, except no one gets it. And in Australia, you have a 1 in 828 chance of dying from COVID, which seemingly is 10 times better, but everyone gets it. So who's better off?
Well, I think the people in Nigeria are better off, not just because they have fewer cases, but because their government is not insane. Our government is random testing people with no symptoms whatsoever. And that's the only reason why we have 7 million cases of COVID. And we're using a PCR test, which even at its very best, according to its inventor, Carrie Mullis, can really not determine whether or not you have an infection. There's no way PCR should be used to test for infections. But we are using what's called the cycle threshold. When you use a PCR test, you amplify, or it's like using a photocopier machine. You make copies of the virus that you're looking for, and you're looking to see if that virus is in there. Anything over 25 cycles will give you false negatives. Anything over 35 cycles will give you almost 100% false negatives. And we are running the PCR test at between 40 and 45 cycles. So even if it was an effective test, even if they could prove that these people had COVID, these tests are all false positives. I don't believe that these people are getting COVID. I believe that the people who are dying from other things. And if they have symptoms of the flu, they probably have the flu. We already know that several of the tests have been withdrawn because they couldn't distinguish between influenza and COVID-19. So it is all very much an agenda-driven and political policy to do what we're doing. And we are suffering as a result, aside from the great cost to our economy and the huge increase in suicides and people dying from despair. There are all the people who are being affected from having had to take the jab to keep their job, to see their loved ones, to do the things that we would normally do in society without worrying about this. And they have intentionally terrified the population. People are psychotic now. That's all I can say. The people who you see driving alone in their car with a mask on, the people you see out in the surf with a mask on, that is a mental illness. That is not normal. And I'm not blaming them. I'm saying that that is what was done to them by our government policies and our media.
Yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And if you are just a compliant person doing what you're told to do, I mean, how do you blame these people? But at some point, you have to realize that you're an adult and you are responsible for your own decisions. And I think that's the thing that we've sort of alluded to and skirted around in this conversation today, is the idea that we've sort of handed back our autonomy, our ability to be responsible for self. It's kind of like the term consequence I brought up in something that I was putting together just the other day, that in our lifetime, I would say it like this, that most of us are a result of a consequence. In order for the globalists, however, to create their new world order, they will cash in all of their favors for the consequences for and of their idealism, using problem, reaction, solution as their plan. It is the perfect sleight of hand, not the axe to get them there, but the lack of consequence in performing these acts upon the people. They have never suffered in any way the consequence of their actions, nor have we heard about it in the media, the courts. Well, this is what you're going to challenge. The schools, the universities, they don't even ask a question. Our institutions are all beholden to be built in a consequence protection racket. Yet as individuals in society, we know no other way. Whatever we do, there is a consequence. Goodness me, you drive 62 in a 60 zone and you get a ticket from a private citizen parked on the side of the road. But because of these consequences, we are forced, programmed, told that the perpetrators will also provide the consequences and yet never suffer their own consequences. It's Animal Farm, and we don't even know it. And that's how bad it is to me at the moment, that we are literally living on Earth, but it's being turned into Animal Farm before our very eyes. And I don't know at what point do we try and illustrate this in a better way to let people understand what we're seeing and why they can't see it. I mean, I feel it's that bad. You're obviously in the same ballpark, but does that ring true with you?
Oh, very much so. And I think that what we just have to do is keep sharing, and not sharing in a way that, you know, batters people, but sharing what we can from love, from a position of, I will accept whatever you choose, but I don't know if you're aware of this. Most people are not even aware that these jabs are not licensed. They are experimental. Not one of them has ever been licensed. And, you know, the number of jabs people are getting, they thought that they would be able to stop after two. Now it's three. Now it's four. Just asking them, well, how many more are you willing to take? Things like that are really important. And you're right. Accountability is the issue. If the government, if the media were held accountable for the crimes that they are committing, which are crimes against humanity, then the people who are in the background saying nothing, the backbenchers, the members of the other parties, they would be speaking out. But they right now are cowards, and they'd rather protect their you know, income and their career than actually the people who they were elected to represent. There are thousands of doctors in Australia who are speaking out. You don't hear about them because nobody covers them, but there are thousands of doctors speaking out, and there are tens of thousands that are not and have never taken the jab themselves. So they need to find the courage of their convictions, and they need to stop being cowards and actually speak up. Remember that they are there to protect the health of their patients and not the health of their back pocket or the financial health of the pharmaceutical industry. We are living at a time where the threats against the common man are worse than they have ever been. And if we stand together, if we actually speak out together, and do not be afraid, because there are so many more of us than there are of them. If we actually did that, this would have been over tomorrow. If the doctors, when the mandates were introduced, had said, we are simply not going to be doing this, it would have been over straight away. There are doctors and chain stores in the United States that are saying they will not administer these jabs to six-month-olds, to five-year-olds. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take people saying, I'm holding the line, I will not comply. And it's going to take us winning our court case, because when we win our court case, there will be no mandates. There will be none of this, because there will be no COVID jabs. They will all be withdrawn. They will be canceled or suspended, and nobody will be harmed by them again. And no company, no government can mandate their use.
Yes, exactly right. And this is what we're finding to fight on as hard as we possibly can, the idea of being able to share. But there's a little bit more in all of this, I think, too, and part of our freedom movement is that we need now to consolidate in everything that we know and what we're capable of doing, and being able to consolidate, as I said, with a new way forward here so that we can create a new force as we move into these new election. We've got the one in Victoria coming up in November. We've got another one in March next year in New South Wales, and it's absolutely crucial that we're able to work out where we go next. We've got so many terrific freedom parties working in their own spaces, but it's like we need to consolidate behind a result, behind a new platform, and work our way forward to a new possibility to win some seats, to challenge, and to get into Parliament where we can become more official, officious, and being able to say what we mean and to certainly challenge what is going on out there in the world, because at the moment it is a free-for-all, and when they're all in one direction and we've got no way of fighting them, they will say whatever they want to say and do whatever they want to do. And so it's absolutely important that we regroup and get out there and be involved at some level, first of all, at a community level, at a personal level, but then, of course, we regroup as community. Meryl, in the last minute of the show, how can people find out a little bit more? So first of all, tell us about the website and then how they'll be able to follow this court case as it comes up, please.
Yes, all of the information will be on the website, which is avn.org.au. And right on the homepage, there is a link that says Judicial Review. And when you click on that, you'll go to a page where you can watch videos about the court case, see all of the updates, see the actual paperwork that's been submitted to the court. And you can also sign up for our free email newsletter, and it comes out about every 2 weeks. The other thing is we urge people to join the AVN. It's $50 a year, and it helps support what we're doing. And we really and truly need all the people who believe in this to put their money behind it if they can afford it. We really do need that.
Well, this is the way that it's going to work moving forward. We have to be able to support each other. It's not expensive to be involved, to do the great work that you're doing. Meryl Dorey, thank you very much again for taking the time out to tell the story. We hope we can support you more. You've had a great time here with us, and we hope to do the same for you. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to TNT Radio.